Hello and welcome back to Pocket Theology. Today we are going to be talking about secular worldviews. If you don't know what that is, don't worry, we're going to explain in just a minute, and it is super important to your walk with Jesus. You're going to get a lot out of this episode. Thanks so much for joining us. Let's get started. Martin, say hello to everyone.
Sabra.
Horrible.
You love
We're
that.
Back to just, I had grace for you last episode. That one was rough.
You loved that.
You've been doing a series of lessons with your youth group about how secular people and how Christian people view the world differently. You have a few questions here that you want to walk through and answer, see, you know, get some important information to our audience. But I want to start off with one that you don't have on the list. Can you define that word secular for us, just so that people know what we're talking about?
I can, thank you. Thanks to the book Faithfully Different by Natasha Crane, in which she defines that a religious worldview is a worldview in which there is a deity or deities, and that person or that deity or deities are authoritative over an individual. That's the important distinction, because while a secular worldview still has the ability to believe in a deity or deities, they do not believe that they are authoritative over them. So here's what that means. As Christians, we believe in Jesus, but more importantly, we follow the teachings of Jesus. We want to be like him. We believe that he has the right to tell us how to live because he is God. A secular worldview can still believe in Jesus. They can still think Jesus is cool. They can still think he's God, but they don't think that Jesus has the right to tell them how to live.
Yeah. So what makes this conversation important is because, like, these are not clean-cut categories. So we can talk about a secular worldview, what people who ultimately in their heart of hearts believe that, like, God doesn't really have the right to tell them what to do, how those people would logically see the world. And then we can talk about Christians, how a follower of Jesus who does think that Jesus, the scriptures, have the right to tell them how to live their lives, how they should logically view the world. The issue is that we have a lot of Christians that, kind of unbeknownst to themselves, they think like secular people. They think like people who don't follow Jesus. They have the same lines of reasoning. They have the same sorts of behaviors. And that's where this gets really important for our walk with our God. We need to discover those areas in our lives where we don't think and act in Christian ways, and we need to fix them. We need to address them. We need to be discipled. So that's kind of what we're wanting you guys to get out of this series on the whole, is an opportunity to look at your own lives, look at how you behave, and see, where are there areas in my life where I'm not acting or thinking like a Christian? I'm acting or thinking like someone who doesn't follow Jesus, someone with a secular view of the world. So with that in mind, let's start working our way through these questions and see what a value we can get. The first one we have here for you, Martin, is how does a secular worldview understand God? You mentioned a little bit about the possibilities. They may or may not believe, like in Jesus, for example, but go more in detail. How does a secular worldview understand God?
So when we talk about a secular worldview, it's not a anti-Christian worldview. It's not non-Christian, I guess. It can
not
be
necessarily.
Exactly. Not necessarily.
It could be, but it doesn't
but it
to.
Can be a lot of things. It can be a Christian worldview. It can also be a non-Christian worldview. It can also be a Buddhist worldview, and it could also be a Hindu worldview. These are really just the lenses that people see the world through. So when I say secular, I don't want you guys to think anti-Christian. While that can be part of it, it is not the whole. A person who holds a secular worldview would understand God in that they are there, or they can be there, but I know better than them. So I taught this lesson Sunday night with our youth group. One of the things I've learned much more, not recently, but in much more depth, is my parents actually knew what they were talking about. So when my parents said...
All of the parents listening to this just cheered.
They
in
did.
Their cars or on their lawnmower, whatever they're doing right now, they just cheered.
Yep. And all of the people who are not parents yet are thinking, oh, not this. So my parents did have a lot to offer me in a lot of different areas because my parents aren't perfect, right? They do know better than me. I used the example of signing up for health insurance. I turned 26 this year, which means I have to get off of my parents' health insurance. And so I had to sign up this year. I went through the process and I realized that I did not understand many of the words nor what they meant. And most of it looked like gibberish. So the rational part of my brain said, call mom. She knows these words. So I called my mom. We stayed on the phone for an hour and a half going through different plans, what they covered, what they didn't cover, which was a very important part because they never tell you what they don't cover. And what's a deductible?
What's a premium?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's a co-insurance? Like, what's co-insurance? Who knows? I also definitely read it and said coinsurance. And so
that love was that.
Embarrassing.
That's for your coin collection, don't you know?
Yeah, clearly. And so I called my mom and I said, Mom, I don't know what any of these are. And she helped me. It would have been very easy to say, I don't know what any of these say. This is a health insurance plan. I'm going to sign up for it. It was very easy to say that. And my wife talked me out of it because she's smarter than me.
So I want to draw attention to something in this illustration. It's very, very appropriate. Martin would obviously be an insane person to just be like, my mother does not exist. Like, he knows his mom exists. He knows where she lives, what her number is, how to get in contact with her. The question is he going to, when appropriate, is he going to appeal to her superior knowledge and authority on certain subjects? In areas where she honestly just knows better than him, is he going to listen to her? And that's what we mean by saying that someone can have a secular worldview, but be religious. They can call themselves a Christian and to some degree believe in the Bible, but have a secular worldview because they believe God exists, just like Martin believes his mom exists, but they just don't want to listen to him, at least on certain subjects. They think they know better. So you can be a religious person who's just prideful or who's just hasn't really examined their life very well or whatever, has certain patterns of behavior that are just subconscious and built into you from a young age that is keeping you from listening to God. That is still a secular way of behaving, even though you may say you believe. So that's a really important point for us to drive home here.
I also want to drive this point home. A secular worldview in application would understand God in that he's there, but I don't need him until I need him. So until I get the diagnosis, I don't need him. Or until my spouse leaves me, I don't need him. Until we have a world-changing event that crushes everything about me, then I need God.
That can be a form. Sometimes those sorts of events can draw people back to God and say, okay, now I need to rub the bottle that the genie comes in and see if he helps me out. And sometimes it can drive people further away. And I'd say it's also a secular worldview if you say that you believe and you want to obey God, but then when things get really hard, you just get angry at him and run away and refuse to obey anymore.
Absolutely.
Because how dare God do this to me? If he was really just, he would never have treated me this way. That's still a type of secular worldview.
Thank you, Job.
So if there's any area of your life you're unwilling to submit to God, that area of your life is secularized, even if the rest of your life is very Christian.
Exactly. So that's part of why this is so important, because most of us, when we talk about secular people, we're not talking about ourselves. but we, you know, we believe in Jesus. We're good. But do I believe that he has the right and knowledge to guide me? Do I need to care where Jesus wants to put me in the world to make a difference? Those kinds of questions are the things that define a Christian worldview versus a secular worldview, especially in how they understand God.
And if you think about it hard enough, every single one of you listening, and both of us, Martin and I sitting here recording this, we can think of an area in our lives that is more secular than other areas, an area that's really hard for us to give over for some reason. It might be your marriage. It might be something about your kids or your parents. Finances is one that's really hard for me. It's just really hard for me to trust God with my money. And I know that, and I don't feel bad saying it, because I know it's an issue and I have been working on it and my lovely wife has helped me to work on it. But there's some area of your life that is harder for you to turn over to God than any other. I guarantee it. So to put a bow on it, answer the question in short format. How does a secular worldview understand God? They just don't understand him as Lord of every part of their lives.
I like to describe it as Jesus is my savior, but he doesn't have to be my Lord.
Ooh, yeah.
It's a good
That's DT. A good one, especially for people that would call themselves Christians but have a more secular worldview. He is my savior, but he's not my Lord. Or he's my friend, but he's not my king.
Boom.
We've talked about how the secular worldview understands God. There's another really important question here. How does a secular worldview understand human beings? How does it understand humanity? What does it say about us and our role in the universe?
So, as I was reading Faithfully Different by Natasha Crane, I started to realize that she is describing a deistic worldview, which, Jason, you understand, but I'm going to explain anyways.
Mm-hmm.
While a theistic worldview believes that God is there and interacts with the world, a deistic worldview with a D, not a TH, is going to believe that there is a God, but he does not interact with the world. He's very hands-off. The world is essentially self-run. People are themselves. And so, especially in this section, that was what she was describing for the most part. And so, when she describes a secular worldview's view on humanity, she says that while Christians would see humans as an intentional act, right? Creation was an intentional act. People were created for a purpose. A deistic worldview would understand that people just showed up. They were the process of evolution or what be it. That ended up creating people. And so she asked the difference, what's the difference between humanity and animals then? Well, in a secular worldview, the difference is we're further developed as a people. Humans have created language. We've created structure. We've created building. We've taken resources. I mean, we are self-sufficient. Humanity will continue with the exception of like somebody getting really new cappy. Like there's a very good chance that humanity will exist through almost anything. Animals then become a source for people, right? Animals basically exist then because we need meat.
Or companionship. Or other materials, or we just think they're cute. Like pandas would have gone extinct a while ago if we didn't think they were adorable. They're not good for anything, but they're cute, so we like them.
Eating bamboo, they eat a lot of that.
Yeah.
My wife was telling me about an animal that looks like a panda, lives in Australia, but instead of eating bamboo, it eats human flesh.
And you can't tell the difference. I do not believe that's true.
I can't remember
what it is. I refuse to believe that's true until proven otherwise. There is no way.
What it is.
No, that is a folktale. I'm leaving this in because I'm very amused by it. But no, there's no way that's true. And we're going to move on from that point.
So I have one more point on this.
Before you do, just to try to like remind people what we're talking about before the flesh eating panda bears came up. How does a secular worldview understand humanity? In part, it's that humanity is purposeless. And here's something that Martin didn't say, but we've both studied this a lot. And this is an area of particular interest of mine. So when he's like, hey, I'm doing this series on this, I was like, yes, this is awesome. Let's do some podcasts. You can have a secularized worldview in concern to human beings and still believe God made humans. So you can be like, oh yeah, God totally made humans and I'm a 6-day creationist or 8-day creationist or whatever. And you can be like, oh yeah, God made humans. The question is, do you believe that God has an ongoing intention for human beings that you are a part of, that your family and friends and community are a part of, that you can either accept or reject? And if the answer to that is no, I don't think God really has a purpose, that's a secular view of anthropology, a secular view of human beings. But if you're saying, yes, I do believe God has a purpose. Now, I may choose to reject that purpose and ignore it, but I do believe he has a purpose for human beings and we are best served by obeying it, by aligning ourselves with his will. That is a Christian worldview of anthropology. Now, a full Christian anthropology is much more complicated than that, but we're going to stick with that for the time being and whatever Martin's next point is, which is...
Here is the problem with believing that there is no purpose in humanity. That then means that we can say one person is more important than another. So, for instance, a child born with a disability then becomes less important than a healthy child because functionally they are lesser.
Yeah, depending on what you're qualifying as making a human. So like for a lot of people, what makes a human better than an animal you brought up a minute ago, right? And yeah. Most people will say secular people or people, you know, even if they call themselves Christians, again, if they have a secular worldview, a secular view of people, what makes a human better than an animal? You might just say, well, we're just animals. Like we act funny, we looked funny, we build bigger things than other animals do, but like we're still just animals. That could be a secular answer. Or you could say humans are more than animals or are different from animals because we're intelligent. So, okay, that's great. Here's two issues. One is how do you define intelligence? And even if you define it, you have very intelligent animals that use tools, build something resembling societies, like they have some form of functional language, different calls to indicate different things to those that they live with. So does that make them human because they've passed a certain threshold of intelligence? The third issue is if somebody has a severe mental disability, does that mean that they're worth less than other people? And anyone that hears that in a developed Western country will go, no, of course not. They're worth every bit as much as humans. But you don't have a reason for why you're saying it if you have a secular worldview. If you're a Christian, you say all humans are made in the image of God, regardless of their ability or disability. And then you have an answer. We are made in the image of God, and that's a spiritual truth that has nothing to do with intelligence. So no matter what you look like, what you act like, how your body operates, what's going on with whatever part of your physical being, you're still made in the image of God. Therefore, you're valuable, equally valuable to everyone else. But if you're a secular person, you can't say that in good faith. So you either have to be a hypocrite, you have to lie to yourself, or you have to say that certain people, especially people with disabilities, or people that are poor, or people that are, you know, have physical injuries that prevent them from doing whatever job or however you qualify humanity and what makes someone valuable. You have to say people can't do X, aren't as human as other people, which is horrific. And no one wants to say that. So
it's part of why I always hate talking about this, because just hearing it come out of my mouth is like, ugh.
Yeah.
But and here's the really like Christian-y application. How do you treat anybody, right? How do you treat people? Well, the people that I like are treated better. I'm okay with them being in the image of God. But I, you know, that kid who kind of smells funny in my third period class, I have a harder time seeing him in the image of God. Or the kid that's kind of mean to me, I don't know if he's in the image of God. It comes out in not only what we believe, but in what we believe as authoritative. And if we believe that Christ has authority and that all people are created in his image, we treat all people as if they were created in his image.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are people, and we give them dignity. We give them respect.
Yeah.
But it's harder for some people, and that's part of that Christian worldview.
There are, in my community and the community where my church is, there are quite a few individuals, because it's pretty low income and there's relatively cheap housing for the area available. There are several adults with fairly severe disabilities that function well enough that they can mostly take care of themselves, but they have a difficult lives, and it's very isolating to be an adult with no family nearby and to have, you know, whatever degree of severe disability. And several of these individuals come periodically, at least, to our church. And some members of the church were, they just didn't know what was going on with one of these individuals, why they behaved the way they behaved. And so you just kind of had to have that conversation of like, well, it is because they have a disability, and that's why they behave the way that they behave. And they asked, essentially, why does that person come to our church? And my response is, if you're an adult with no family, with a severe social or mental or physical disability that's isolating, it makes it really hard to connect with people. Where else are you going to go to find people that are going to love you and accept you for who you are? Like, of course you're going to go to the church. And I think several of these individuals go to several churches every week, because that's where they're accepted. That's where they're loved and cared for. And what a wonderful witness to the rest of the community that these people know. If I can go nowhere else in my town, I can go to these churches and people will accept me. And some of these people, they can't take care of their own hygiene. Like, they're not clean. They're not well put together. But people are still going to, even if they don't, you know, they have, maybe they don't want to, maybe there's something in the back of their head that's like, man, I don't want to interact with this person. But there's a lot of Jesus loving people that set that aside, and they walk in there, you know, I'm just going to be this person's best friend today. I'm going to talk to them. I'm going to talk to them about whatever they want to talk to. And I'm going to make sure they have some coffee and a donut and whatever. I'm going to help them find a seat. I'm going to make sure they get a bulletin, whatever. And I'm going to make sure that they feel welcome. And they do. And that's the Christian worldview in action. But there's a lot of Christians, let's be honest, that'd be confronted with that same situation, duck their head, try to get to their chair real quick, and pretend that those people don't exist. And that is, if that's the kind of thing that you do, then you know that, okay, maybe you believe in your head that Jesus is Lord, but sometimes you have issues putting it in action. But also, to be fair, every single one of us does at times. But we have to recognize those situations, recognize those issues, and fix them.
Yeah, this isn't us condemning anybody. This is us helping to clarify areas that we might need to work on, and areas that Jason and I need to work on as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Martin, we have one more question for you. I feel like we've touched on a little bit here, but just we'll put a finer point on it. How does a secular worldview understand morality?
What a great question, Jason. I could not have asked it better if I had written it myself.
He says that because he did write it himself and sent it to me and said, hey, please ask me this question.
That I did.
Speaking of sin, Martin has an issue with pride that he needs to get past.
My receding hairline helps out with that. But
I'm happy our first bald joke of the new season was you at yourself. That was great.
It is.
All right. So, secular worldview. How does it understand morality? Where do morals come from? How do we know what's right?
So if there is a higher power, but we don't believe that they have the right to tell us what to do, then there's no higher power to give you morals than yourself. So in this is where this one gets tricky, because there's a in theory and there's an in practice.
Mm-hmm.
So in theory, we become the ultimate judge of morality. each individual person does, which makes morality subjective. Nothing can be right for everybody or wrong for everybody, which is part of where apologetics comes into place, where some people would argue there is objective moral values. Every culture believes certain things are right and certain things are wrong. But in a secular worldview where the ultimate authority of right and wrong is yourself, then anything can be in play.
Yeah.
And I just want to take a second for that to sink in. Anything, even the worst things that you can imagine, can become justified.
To put an illustration to it, and I won't go too into detail because I don't want to get like blacklisted on Spotify for saying the wrong words, but like, think about World War II and all the atrocities that occurred. If you do not have a source of absolute morality, you can't say that that was immoral. You cannot logically argue. And this is something that, like, this is not two Christian pastors saying you have to be Christian to have morality, because you can actually have a logical reason to have morality and follow non-Christian religions. Now, we don't think those religions are true, but you can at least be logical in your beliefs. And there are plenty of secular philosophers and thought leaders that admit you cannot have a logically consistent moral system if you do not have a spirituality, some sort of religion. So the famous example is Friedrich Nietzsche, that famously wrote repeatedly that the only rule in a godless society is might makes right. That whoever is the most powerful, what he would call an Ubermensch, a Superman, whoever has enough power or charisma or money or whatever to do what they want, they get to decide what's right and wrong for their society. So there's no real morals. It's just whatever the powerful want to be true is true. And there are people that follow on his heels, like Albert Camus, who says basically the same thing, but then says, but we should just ignore that and make up morals anyways, because it's nice. Camus is a much more complicated and much more intelligent individual than that. But that is the summary of his work is, yeah, Nietzsche's right. Powerful people can do whatever they want. But let's just pretend that's not true and pretend we have morals, because it would be good. And his famous quote is, we must imagine Sisyphus happy. That even though life is pointless and there is no morals, let's just pretend that's not true. And it'll be much more pleasant to live on this world, which he's right about. But also, he's lying to himself and he knows he is. So anything goes if you don't have a God to tell you what's right and what's wrong. And that should be terrifying.
It is terrifying. I firmly believe that morality has to exist somewhere. Part of what this book is trying to do is, especially in this chapter, trying to attack the idea of worldview neutrality, that there are things that all people in all worldviews can accept and understand. And one of them is morality. There are some things, there are a lot of things, that different people disagree on being right and wrong because of what they believe about God, because of what they believe about the world. Even if they aren't religious, they just have different values. And so while one person could be irreligious and believe murder is wrong for some reason, right? They don't believe that everyone is created in the image of God. And they would believe even if it were legal, it would still be wrong. I want to throw that out there, because you're not talking about legality. You're talking about morality.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it were legal, murder was wrong. While someone else might say, well, if it's not illegal, then why am I not doing it? Because it's going to give me the ultimate happiness, which is utilitarian understanding of good and right and wrong.
Kind of, yeah. A good example of this, again, to point to, man, I'm going to get us blacklisted because the examples that I'm pulling up, but you necessarily have to go for heavy ones just to drive the point home. If you believe that all people agree, barring mental illness, we'll bar, like, if someone has some sort of severe mental illness that is going to totally mess up their ability to function in a society, some sort of disorder that we classify as a antisocial personality disorder. If we bar that, so we bar mental illness, we just say normal mentally healthy people. We say everyone at least agrees on certain basic things. Certain basic things are immoral. Look at the KKK. Because the KKK or the Aryan Brotherhood or whatever white supremacist group you want to point to, and you can find other extremist groups, have plenty of people that do not have diagnosable mental illnesses. They do. Some members probably do have diagnosable mental illnesses, but many don't. They're just extremized. You can find members of the KKK that think it's perfectly fine to murder someone based off the color of their skin. So there's no underlying universal morality. It doesn't exist if there's no God to say this is what's true. You can't go to every people group, every community, every society on the face of the earth and find some sort of magical set of rules that everyone just agrees is true because it's programmed into our DNA. Those rules don't exist. And if you believe that they exist, I'll point you to the work of a historian by the name of Tom Holland, just like the actor, but he's a different guy, although he is also British. Tom Holland, who wrote a book, I think called Empire. I don't remember the subtitle of it, but if you look up Tom Holland historian, it'll pull right up. And it's all about how the morality of the West is ultimately just Christian morality without Jesus. So if you live in the Western hemisphere in a European influenced country, and you believe that everyone agrees that murder is wrong, that assault's wrong, that theft is wrong, that cheating is wrong, if you think that, you only think that because of Christianity, even if you're not a Christian. And Tom Holland's work proves it. And by the way, he's not a Christian either. He's just a historian. He's a secular historian that has just traced the history of our morality in the West and says it's all Christian at its bedrock. So there's no such thing as a secret morality. It's a myth that people tell themselves to feel like they can have morals without God.
So this actually is exactly why there is two different sections to this question. The first one was in theory, which we've discussed.
Yeah.
But we also made quite a few references to it feels really gross to say this, which is why there's also an in practice. So in practice, secular morality is whatever the majority of people agree is right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why this gets really tricky. Because people are always changing. And so morality then is always changing. It's impossible to be good when the standard for good is always changing. And so when you talk about secular morality, a secular worldview would accept certain things as good that Christian worldviews wouldn't, right? But more importantly, there's the potential for that to change. And so if in, 100 years, Christians are the majority again, and then all of a sudden, the morality changes to Christian again, it looks like a Christian worldview as a secular morality. There are a lot of things that are accepted right now that are not accepted under a Christian worldview, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I have a very specific story that I remember. So I'm in a small group for youth group when I was a teenager. I'm sitting with my youth pastor, his wife, me, my wife right now, who was my girlfriend at the time, and one other kid. And we, the topic of sex comes up. That's what we were talking about that night. And the other kid says this exact phrase that you can hear all throughout secularity. Why wouldn't you test drive before you buy?
I hate that so much.
And he genuinely meant it.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you have sex before marriage? That doesn't make any sense. Why wouldn't you
be sure you're compatible? How many times have you heard that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a very secular idea.
Mm-hmm.
God said no, but I know better.
Yeah. Yes. And that goes right back to the core where we started at the beginning of this episode. You may accept that there's a God. You may even say he has some amount of authority over you. But any area of your life where you say, I know better, that area is secular. And sex is one that is secular for a lot of people. You just say, no, God, you know, I know what your scriptures say. I know what the church has always taught. I know better. So I'm going to go test drive before I buy, because I know better. So let's go back and let's summarize these questions real quick. How does the secular worldview picture God? You said he might be my savior, but he's not my Lord.
Yes.
How does the secular worldview picture humanity? And ultimately the answer is they're purposeless. They don't have an ultimate something that they're pushing for. They don't have a place in the universe that God has designed and intends for them.
Unintentional and purposeless. Exactly. Yes.
Unintentional and purposeless is a good way to put it. And then last of all, how does it picture morality? And you said there's two halves. In theory, it's just whatever you make up for yourself. But in practice, it's usually whatever the majority says is true. And the majority doesn't have to be the majority of all people the world over. It's the majority of people that you spend time with, usually. So if you surround yourselves, part of the reason, why it's important for Christians to be around other Christians, if you surround yourselves with people that have a broadly Christian worldview, even if you have a secular method of defining your morality, which is not ideal, you'll probably still end up acting like a Christian for the most part, because others are helping you to. Now, that's not ideal. You want to obey Jesus because he's Jesus, not because other people are telling you to. But I think it's better to do the right things for the wrong reasons than to just do the wrong things. That's just me.
So the last thing that I want to throw out there, there's an image that she uses to explain what secular morality looks like. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that listen to this will probably understand really well as soon as I say it. It's like playing a board game with a toddler. Because while you have the rule book and you've read through and you know what you're supposed to be doing, you know how the game works, there's somebody on the other side of the table who said, I don't need rules, I know how to play this, and then made up whatever they wanted. And so it becomes very difficult. First of all, this is part of this practical application to Christian morality in this worldview. It's very hard to play the game when no one else is playing by the rules. If I'm playing Monopoly and the three people I'm playing with are moving their people wherever they want and avoiding paying or avoiding landing on the squares that I own and don't want to pay the rent or whatever the stupid thing is, I don't actually like Monopoly, but it's the best image that I could get at this point. Mm-hmm. If they're just making stuff up and they're buying places that they're not landing on, all of this, then it's very hard for me to play in a way where I respect the rules. Because if I land on a property nobody else has, but they bought it somehow, then I still have to pay. And if they pass go, they get $1,000. But if I pass go, I get $200. And now I can't buy as much as they have. Or I get sent to jail, and I'm staying there until I roll doubles or whatever it is, and they get sent to jail and say, I just pulled this paper out of my pocket and it says get out of jail free, so I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's very difficult to play the game. It's not even the same game. Yeah. Which makes it really hard to continue to follow those rules.
Yeah, so existing in the world as a Christian with a Christian worldview can feel like playing a board game with a toddler. Like the other person, they're not following the rules. They're turning everything to their advantage. Things seem random, and it seems like you're put at a disadvantage. And this is exactly how the early church felt. When you read the letters to the churches at the beginning of Revelation, several of the churches that are being praised for their perseverance are, John is alluding to things that they're having to endure, persecutions they're having to endure, not being able to, you know, have the same rules in trade and commerce as other people who are non-Christians had, those sorts of things. They are in a world where their morality, their set of rules, is much more strict and does not fit what those around them are doing. And we can, depending on the circles and communities that we walk in, where we work, who we spend time with outside of our church community and stuff like that, we can feel very much the same way. But unfortunately, or fortunately, we're called to bring the gospel to those people. We're told by Jesus, even if it's unfair, even if it hurts, you have to keep playing the board game with the toddlers. and you have to keep obeying the rules, and you have to keep witnessing to them and trying to convince them that the rules are important. And maybe at some point they'll grow up. Maybe at some point they'll start obeying the same rules. Maybe at some point they'll start worshiping the same God, and it's your job to give them the chance. Because if you don't tell them, who's going to? So I think that's a good place for us to stop, unless you have any other parting thoughts, Martin.
No, I think that's a beautiful note to end on.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We hope that this is helpful, that maybe it's brought to mind some areas of your life where you're thinking about things in a secular way instead of in a Christian way. And if you are, join the club. We all do. Just like I said towards the beginning of this episode, every single one of us has areas in our lives that we have trouble turning over to our Lord and Savior, no matter how much we love him, because we are fallen and messed up people. But God has grace, and God has the power to help us change. So pray for his help, turn to his scriptures, and turn to the community that he gives you in the church to help transform you into his likeness. And know that one day, you know, when we put on a glorious body and we are in a new heavens and a new earth, we will live the way that we're supposed to. That is our hope as Christians. So thank you guys again so much for joining us. We hope this was encouraging and challenging and helps you grow closer to Jesus. We will see you back here next week with our next episode on secular and Christian worldviews.